Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo Maheshwara, Guru Sakshat Parabrahma, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Good. Gurudeva gives this description of celebration of Mahashivaratri in Dancing with Shiva, and indicates we observe it by chanting Shiva's names, singing his praises, chanting Sri Rudram, and bathing the Shiva Lingam. Some of this we've done already, and some is coming up. And then Gurudeva adds two more activities. These are less common in temples and usually reserved for ceremonies in monasteries and ashrams, which are meditating. We did that one. And being near the monks as they strive to realize Parashiva, the transcendent aspect of God. Well, that takes place all night. Simply stated, the essence of the celebration of Mahashivaratri is to have a deeper experience of God than is normally available to us. In other words, it's a festival of nivritti. I wish they would make Sanskrit words easier to pronounce. There's nivritti and pravritti, which you're all up to date on, right? And so pravritti means an energy which is going out. Nivritti means an energy that's going in. So many festivals like Anicca Chaturthi are pretty much just a celebration. Great time for children and sweets and everything. It's more a pravritti, an external celebration. And whereas Mahashivaratri is a nivritti, we're going within. We're trying to go within ourselves. We're trying to get closer to Shiva. So it's a turning within. And it's the opposite. We don't get to eat, right? All the sweets, but not only the sweets, but everything else goes away. We can tell from that it's a little bit different. So the concept of realizing Parashiva, the transcendent aspect of God, sounds a bit distant, right? Well, fortunately, Gurudeva gave us a way of bringing it closer, which we looked at last year, and this year we'll just go through it quickly. Last year we went through it in more detail. It's called 9 Progressive Ways of Merging with Shiva. Remember that? It's in the introduction to his book, Merging with Shiva. So I've just taken a few ideas from it. It would take too long to read the whole thing. So 9 progressive ways to merge with Shiva, and the first one, of course, is, well, let me read the introduction. Of the 9 ways listed, realizing Parashiva is the 8th, so there's 7 steps before that one. And these steps lead up to it naturally. To quote from Gurudeva's writing, merger on the great inner path described in this book is already happening in your life and in the life of every soul on the planet, in the natural course of evolution. In Sanskrit, we express merging with Shiva as Shiva Sayuja, intimate union with the divine. 9 progressive ways of merging with Shiva are possible today, in fact, impossible to avoid. Shall we now explore these 9 ways, the wonderful ways of merging with Shiva as we walk the Sanmarga, the straight path of Dharma? So the first one, that's the easiest one. By being born, we've merged with our mother. So that was really easy, as far as we're concerned. Okay, check off number 1. Number 2, when our parents train us to quell the instinctive mind, become a productive member of the family and the social and global communities, that's the second merger. So we're merging with people. This is the first way we merge with Shiva. And we'll look at that a little bit later, because people are Shiva. So merging with people is not different than merging with Shiva. Obedience and devotion to the Guru is the third merger into Shivanas. And as Gurudeva mentioned in his talk, that's not always easy. There's some people like to have a guru who's passed on, and they put his picture up on the wall and they say, this person's my guru. I call that a safe guru. You know why? He won't ask you to do anything you don't want to do. But a real guru is like a real parent, you know, a parent versus a teenager. The parent is definitely going to ask you to do, and the guru is definitely going to ask you to do things you don't want to do. And therefore you have to gain additional control over the instinctive mind, the intellectual mind, and the ego. So that's why it's not just having a guru, it's obedience and devotion to the guru. Fourth is cultural accomplishments, such as art, calligraphy, drawing divine forms, writing out scripture. So learning and playing music, so that's coming more into culture, more into refinement. The fifth merger is merger with the selfless life, of seeing oneself in others, and others in oneself, of losing the barriers that divide one from another, and the internal world from the external world. It is living a harmonious life with a heart filled with love, trust, and understanding for all, desiring to give rather than wanting only to receive. The key word here is selfless, so we need to expand our selflessness. All of us here, I'm sure, are doing some form of selfless service, seva, and the idea here is to expand it and to stretch it to the limit. If you stretch it to the limit, as it says here, losing the barriers that divide one from another, we start to not see everybody as separate. We're losing the barriers that divide one from another, meaning we're not really divided. There's just a barrier there that makes us think we're divided. So we're losing that barrier. So Gurudeva puts great emphasis on that. Then he turns to meditation, which is the sixth one. The light that lights each thought picture when traced to its source is the sixth merger. Being the light that lights the thoughts rather than claiming identity as being the thoughts. Then tracing this light of the mind out of the mind into the beyond of the beyond. So that's a good point to say something about Gurudeva's form of meditation. I was surprised. I did some research on different forms of meditation. The first one I ran into is the Blue Mountain Ishvaran, if not Ishvaran, wonderful meditation teacher. His method is repeating in your mind inspiring verses from any of the world's scriptures. He calls that meditation. I said, whoa, I didn't know about that kind of meditation. Another common one is japa. But that's japa. Repeating a mantra is japa, it's not meditation. And then another one is visualization. Visualizing Nataraja in your mind. But Gurudeva's isn't any of those. His is experiencing. And it starts in a very simple way. You know, we experience the heat of the body. We're not visualizing it. We're not imagining it. Okay, let me feel the warmth of the body. And then it goes into more subtle things, and one of the subtle aspects is seeing inner light. So it's not visualizing it, it's actually seeing the inner light that's there. Starting to look into our intuitive or superconscious mind. So we're actually experiencing it. And it's subtle. So that's why all these other ways of merging with Shiva come first. Meditation is a very subtle practice. And unless you've sensitized yourself, you'll sit there and you won't see anything. talking to a doctor about it, and I compared it to learning how to use a microscope, powerful microscope. If you don't know how, you can't focus it. You're trying to see something in a slide, but you're not able to focus the microscope to the right depth to see what's in the slide. You don't know how. But it's in the slide. It's always in the slide. So likewise, our inner sight, we don't know how to focus it to see what's always there. So we have to learn the ability to focus it. Seventh one is inner sound, which Gurudeva calls them, the Nadi Nadi Shakti. I think I'm talking too loudly. Got excited. Nadi Nadi Shakti. That's the high E, the inner sound. So that's more subtle than the light that lights the thoughts. So we're getting more and more subtle here. Then the eighth one is Parashiva, or the transcendent self, which all the monks are supposed to be realizing tonight. Coming and being timeless, formless, spaceless is the total transformation of the soul body, the mental body, the astral body, the pranic body, and the physical body. It's the breaking of seals, which subsequently makes changes never to be repaired. A new and entirely new process begins. It is the ultimate healing of all karmas, the ultimate knowing of Dharma. But that's only number 8, right? What could be number 9? So number 9 is what's called Vishvagrasa, or merger. So the simplest way to think of merger is when the soul is created, we take the bucket, since we're in Hawaii, we take the bucket, scoop it in the ocean, and we've created an individuated consciousness. The water in the bucket now thinks it's separate from the water in the ocean. But at the end, Vishvagrasa, the water in the bucket gets poured back in the ocean, and then you can't separate it anymore. So that's Vishvagrasa. And some people say, why would I want to do that? I enjoy who I am, but, you know, if you think about it, you're a finite consciousness, and wouldn't you prefer to be infinite? You know, you only know a little bit. Wouldn't you prefer to be all-knowing? You think you're just yourself. Wouldn't you prefer to be everybody? You know, once you get used to the idea, you start to warm up to it. So we want to distinguish between 3 things, just to be clear: realization, liberation, and merger. In our philosophy, they're very distinct. In some philosophies, it's all the same thing. But to us, realization means realizing Parashiva. So if you do that once, that's great, but that's not enough to achieve the other 2. You have to do that a lot. Liberation is when you've done it enough, and a few other things enough, that you don't need to be reborn. Gurudeva gave that example in Switzerland. He said, you know, we went to Switzerland 3 times as tourists, we saw everything just to see, why would we want to go back? So Earth is the same way, you know, when you've seen everything there is to see, why would you want to go back? Or said another way, you know, if you graduated from university and you try and go back to high school, they wouldn't let you in. You've been here, you've done that. So likewise, there reaches a point when we've done everything we can do on the earth and we need to move on and do things in the inner plane. So it's a natural point. And then from the inner planes, you don't immediately merge. In our philosophy, it takes a while. You have to work, you have to become more refined. Become more and more like Shiva and get more and more used to the idea, warm up to the idea that it's okay to merge. I don't mind not living in this bucket anymore. So that's realization, liberation, and merger, and Gurudeva has a 2-fold and a 3-fold definition of liberation, and so we'll use the 3-fold one. Liberation occurs when all karma has been resolved, Dharma has been fulfilled, and God fully realized. Remember? So, all karma resolved, that's self-evident, meaning all the reactions to the actions, we've worked through them. There's nothing more we have to experience that's queued up in our karma. There's nothing queued up there. and we're at such an intensity, we're not generating anything new. Spiritual intensity, you read that in the Master Course, you don't generate new karma when you're holding a certain high vibration. It immediately resolves. What you've done immediately resolves itself. So you're totally clean. You don't have any karma. Resolved all karma, fulfilled all dharma. So we need to do all the things that the earth has to offer. We have to have experience. We have to have bodha, experience of the earth. When we've had enough experience of the earth and we've matured and learned everything, which is like, you know, going through grammar school, middle school, high school, university. And when we've gone through everything it offers, then we've fulfilled all dharma. And we have to do it well. So that's why Gurudeva says, wherever you are in life, do what you're doing and do it well. That's what fulfilling dharma is called. So there's it's a very interesting, I'll tell the story first. Stories are the best part. It's in something I wrote. It was talking about looking at the world. The scientist looks at the world and sees matter and says, this is all that exists. You know, there's no God. Whereas the mystic looks at the world, doesn't see matter, sees God. Says, well, this is God. You know? So, two are looking at the same thing. One sees it as matter and the other sees it as God. So, why do we consider the world God? Because creation is emanational. Meaning, it comes out of God. So therefore it is God. It's like the hair on the arm is emanational. It's me. You know, it came out of me, it's still me. So what comes out of something is still something, even though it's different than the original. So everything comes out of God and then eventually goes back into God. So it's all emanational, and therefore it is, God is his creation. Though it's a different form, he is that. There isn't anything that is not God from that point of view. So Gurudeva explains it this way. He says, it is because Shiva is the life of our lives. As the venerable saints teach, Shiva is the life of all sentient and insentient beings. The sea of prana, ever emanating mysteriously from the all of the allness of his mystery being, by which all life exists and all happenings happen. Therefore, to merge energies with all other humans without making differences is to find Shivaness in all and within all. So I have two quotes. I don't have time for both. See which one is better. This is good. Dancing with Shiva, Sloka 41. Where did this universe come from? Supreme God Shiva created the world and all things in it. He creates and sustains from moment to moment every atom of the seen physical and unseen spiritual universe. Everything is with him. Everything is within him. He is within everything. So from Shiva's perspective, he's everything. And if you, when you hold, manage to hold Shiva's perspective, then you become everything too. That's why everything is within him. And he is within everything, meaning he permeates it as a consciousness. God Shiva created us. He created the earth and all things upon it, animals, animate and inanimate. He created time and gravity, the vast spaces and the uncounted stars. He created night and day, joy and sorrow, love and hate, birth and death. He created the gross and the subtle, this world and the other worlds. There are three worlds of existence, physical, subtle, and causal. The creator of all, Shiva himself, is uncreated. As Supreme Mahadeva, Shiva wills into manifestation all souls in all form, issuing them from himself, like light from a fire. That's an easy one, right? Light from a fire. So Shiva's the fire, which gives forth light, and the light is the creation. Or waves from an ocean. Rishis describe this perpetual process as the unfoldment of 36 tattvas, stages of manifestation, from the Shiva Tattva, Parashakti, and Nada to the five elements. So we won't get into that one. Needs a big chart. Creation is not the making of a separate thing, but an emanation of himself. Lord Shiva creates, constantly sustains the forms of his creations, then absorbs them back into himself. The Vedas elucidate, as a spider spins and withdraws its web, as herbs grow on the earth, as hair grows on the head and the body of a person, so also from the imperishable arises this universe. Then there's one more, which we do have time for. Sloka 26, what is our individual soul nature? Our individual soul is the immortal and spiritual body of life that animates life and reincarnates again and again until all necessary karmas are created and resolved and its essential unity with God is fully realized. So that's the two-point definition, which leaves out Dharma. Our soul is God's Shiva's emanational creation, the source of all our higher faculties, including knowledge, will, and love. Our soul is neither male nor female. It is that which never dies, even when its four outer sheaths, physical, pranic, instinctive, and mental, change form and perish as they naturally do. And it goes into the Sanskrit names, we'll skip that. Parashakti is the soul's superconscious mind, God Shiva's mind. Parashiva is the soul's inmost core. We are not the physical body, mind, or emotions. We are the immortal soul, Atman. The sum of our true existence is Anandamaya Kosha, the soul body and its essence, Parashakti and Parashiva. The Vedas expostulate. The soul is born and unfolds in the body with dreams and desires and the food of life. And then it is reborn in new bodies in accordance with its former works. The quality of the soul determines its future body, earthly or airy, heavy or light. So the last thought is on nothingness. One of the ways Gurudeva explains Parashiva, the transcendent self, is if you visualize above you nothing to the right of you, nothing to the left of you, nothing in front of you, nothing, and in back of you, nothing, and dissolve yourself into that nothingness, that would be the best way to explain the realization of the self. Which is true. But I have another way, which may not be the best. Based on that nothingness, so you've heard it before, but each time it may mean something a little more, because it's abstract. That's a shower. Can you see the shower there? That's a shower head. There's water coming out of the shower head. Okay, we're all used to that. We shower. Now, imagine the shower head is invisible. It's a nothingness, but the water is still coming out. Right? So we have something coming out of nothing. Well, that's the first tattva, energy, actinic energy coming out of Parashiva. It doesn't really come out, but it's generated somehow by the presence of Parashiva, causes this energy to flow, which is also called life. Oh, that's the idea. And therefore, all we have to do is trace it in. If we can trace the energy in to its source, then that's how we could dissolve ourselves into that nothingness. Thank you very much.